There's a question that many people have in the world and which has existed in the world for centuries. What is more important, science or religion? On one side, we may find people who say that we don't need God, we can find happiness just with material progress. We don't need spiritual progress also, just material progress is enough. And on the other side, we may find people who say, No, we don't need material progress. We only need spiritual progress. Forget about material progress. So, according to the way it is explained by Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj, I'm going to give you a short talk tonight explaining that, in fact, both sides are wrong. The side who says we don't need God is wrong, and the side who says we don't need material progress, material things, they're also wrong. Actually, we need both. So, we'll look at a few points. Let's take one side first, because both sides may try to negate the other side. So, first take the side of a materialistic person who wants to negate the need for God, or to negate the need for spiritual progress. First of all, such a person may say, well, I don't believe in God, if you can't prove it to me. Show me some evidence that God exists. Or if science can't prove that God exists, then why should I believe? So the question for such a person is, do you not have to have the right equipment in order to prove the existence of something? 200 years ago, could anybody prove the existence of microorganisms? Someone may have hypothesized about it, thought maybe they existed, but nobody had eyewitness proof until we built such a microscope through which we could see those microbes. So does that mean they didn't exist? No, they did exist. Or if I say today, well, I can't see the microbes here with my naked eye, so why should I believe they exist? The scientist will say, well, you need the right equipment. You need a certain type of microscope in order to see those microbes. It's the same thing with God. God is, in fact, not the subject of physical science. Material science cannot reach God, prove God, or disprove God, because God is not the subject of material science. Just like in this world, sound is the subject of the ear, so you can prove the existence of sound with your ears. You can't prove the existence of sound with your taste buds or with your eyes. So ears have a particular subject, eyes have a particular subject, our sense of touch has a particular subject. So this is even within the material field, within just material things we're talking about. Now, God is not even material. God is divine, a whole other realm. So how can we hope to prove or disprove the existence of God when he is not even material? So material science can prove or disprove the existence of material things, not of divine things. Yet, scientific logic, a scientific way of thinking, is still useful on the spiritual path. Think of it this way. Every scientist accepts certain things that have been established by those who went before him. There's no scientist in the world today who comes out and says, no, I'm not accepting anything anyone has said before me. I'm not accepting what Newton says. I'm not accepting what Stephen Hawking says. I'm going to reprove every theory myself, and until I reprove it, I'm not believing anything. That scientist will die before he gets anywhere. We accept what has gone before. We accept what has been proven before, and then we go forward from that. So we use that as a base. So there are thousands of saints in the history of India who have seen God, attained God, experienced God. They have proven the existence of God. And we can also prove the existence of God if we follow the path that they lay out for us. So just like in science there are reproducible results, let's say someone wants to reproduce another scientist's experiment. Actually, that's part of science. If you can't do that, then the world will not accept your scientific theory. That, okay, you did cold fusion? Well, no one else has been able to do it, so we don't believe that cold fusion is possible. It has to be reproducible results. So you say you've attained God, then I should be able to attain God too. Saints say, yes, come with me, follow this path, you will also attain God. You will get to see God with your own eyes. So, even in science, we have faith in the experts. Then we go forward from there. So it's the same thing in the spiritual field, in things related to God. We take the word of the saints, those who are the experts in that field, who have they have a direct experience of God. So if we want to experience God, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can just accept what they're saying and proceed accordingly. Then we can see God for ourselves. So, although physical science with scientific experiments, instruments of this world, we cannot prove the existence of God because God is beyond the material world, yet it is scientific because those who have gone before and have directly experienced God, if we follow their teachings, we can also have a direct experience of God. Now, someone else may think that, okay, God exists. I'll accept that God exists, but I don't need God. I can be perfectly happy without God. Just give me material progress, material things, and I don't need God to be happy. This we know to be untrue from our own experience, from our own life. Let's do a comparison. Just think about the world in general. Does multiplying material possessions multiply happiness? Let's say, go back 30 or 40 years ago when there were no cell phones. Black and white TV. So many fewer all these toys we have. None of that was there. So we didn't have so many things to amuse us and keep us company when we were alone. All these things we rely on nowadays. You can say that science has delivered so much progress. We are hundreds or thousands of times ahead of where we were 30, 40, 50 years ago, but has our happiness multiplied by the same amount? If you just have enough money to get by, and you could measure how happy you were in that state, and then let's say you become a billionaire. So now you have that many times much more money than you had before. Has your happiness multiplied by the same amount? No. A beggar who has a child born to them feels so happy. This is my child. The king and queen have a child born to them. They also feel the same happiness. Is the king or queen more happy than the beggar? No. Both are the same. Let's say someone saves up, say someone in India saves up to buy himself a motorcycle. So now he can go to work on his own motorcycle. And another person who's much more well off, he used to ride a motorcycle, but now he's saved up to buy himself a car. So he doesn't ride to work on his motorcycle, he goes in his car. Which one is more happy? Both are happy with their new thing. It's the newness that gives us the happiness, and it's temporary and fading. That man who just got his new motorcycle, he hops on his motorcycle, and when he rides around, he feels so happy that I have this thing I didn't have before. But the one who got the car, he has the same type of happiness, but the car's not giving him more happiness than the motorcycle is giving the other person. And those two experiences both fade at the same rate. both of them, after a few days or a few weeks, get bored with their car or their motorcycle. Sarve chayanta nichaya patananta samuchraya sanyoga viprayoganta marnantancha jivanam. Our scriptures say that everything in this world is temporary. The happiness of any kind in this world reduces, fades, and ultimately finishes. We know that even if we gave everybody in this whole world everything, think of all the things you've ever wanted, needed, or wanted. Let's say you got all of that, and not only you, but every single person in this world, all the material things we ever needed or wanted. Now, is everybody happy? No. Everybody will be temporarily entertained by all their possessions, but nobody is perfectly happy, no matter how much material possessions they have. No matter how much progress we make scientifically, we always want more. So it shows that internally there's something missing. Internally there's something lacking. No matter how much material progress we make. So our scriptures say it's simple. Anando brahmeti vyajanat anandadheva khalvimani bhutani jayante anandena jivanti anandam prayantyabhisambhishanti. Taittiriya Upanishad says, God is anand. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham. Chandogya Upanishad says, that anand, that true happiness, that is unlimited, it lasts forever, and it is ever increasing. These three qualities are there if happiness is true happiness. So the happiness of this world is neither unlimited, it's always in some limitation. Nor does it last forever. Nor does it go on increasing every moment. In fact, it's the opposite. It goes on decreasing every moment. But God's happiness does fulfill these three criteria. Raso vai saha rasagvam hevayam labdhvanandi bhavati. Taittiriya Upanishad says, God is ras. He is anand. And any soul who attains him becomes perfectly happy. So only by attaining God can a soul receive real happiness. Happiness is not the product of some external thing. How can something on the outside make us happy on the inside? So realizing God makes us happy on the inside, and external things, they can entertain us for some time, but they can't make us perfectly happy forever. Only God can make us perfectly happy forever. And the proof, again, the saints. The saints say, I've attained God, he is perfect happiness. If you want to be perfectly happy forever, then you must also attain God. And if you want to do it, follow this path. If you want to find more of what you've already received in the world, you can do that on your own. But that will always be limited, imperfect. You see, through material progress, we can learn to control the outer world. But material progress cannot help us control the inner world. It's the inner world that causes us, in fact, more suffering than the outer world. From the outer world, we may get physical discomfort or physical pain, but most of us experience more pain from our inner world, from our emotions, from our attachments, desires, our sorrow, our disappointment in the world. That's what gives us even more pain, most of us, than what we experience physically. And that can't be removed through material progress. So material progress can help us physically, but material progress cannot teach us to control our inner world. It's this world, our anger, our jealousy, our hatred, that's what causes the most problems and gives us the most pain. We can develop any kind of new technology, but we also need to have the ability to know how to use that technology or how not to use that technology. A gun in the wrong hands, a gun in the hands of a crazy person is a dangerous thing. But a gun in the hands of a good person can help protect people. So, it's all dependent, in fact, how we use the technology is dependent on how much we've progressed internally, and that means spiritual progress. Through spiritual progress, we gain control over our inner self, and through material progress, we gain control over the outer world. Take another example. Let's say there's a wealthy person who has a servant, and the servant makes some chai for his master, and on the way he brings it, and by accident he spills a little bit, and it gets on his master's hand and scalds him. And he starts yelling at him, berating him, rebuking him, scolding him. "What's the matter with you? Don't you know what you're doing? How can you do such a thing to me?" The servant is just sitting there, taking everything. He's bearing everything that this man is throwing at him. Does the servant in turn rebuke his master? "What are you talking about? You're also the same way. You're no better than me." No, he stays quiet. So who has more power? Who is stronger? Who has more power over his inner world? That man who has so much materially, or his servant who has next to nothing? The servant has more power over his inner world. The master was unable to control his emotions, unable to control his reaction. The anger came out, and the servant controlled himself. He said, "No, I'll just stay quiet." Let's say a person lives in a mansion full of all the latest toys, full of all the latest technology. But if the owner of that house, the person who lives there, is insane, then what good are all those toys? So we have to be healthy on the inside, not just on the outside. Material progress can keep us healthy medically, physically, but material progress cannot keep us healthy on the inside. So we've addressed a few points. A materialistic person may try to negate the existence of God. I explained that, in fact, through material science, God can neither be proven or disproven. But by following the path to God, one can get direct proof of God's existence. Someone may also try to negate the need for God, saying that I can be happy without God, but we looked at our own experience in this world and saw that no matter how much we have in the world, we always desire for more because material things cannot make us happy on the inside. They only give us temporary excitement or temporary entertainment on the outside. And as far as our inner situation, all the inner negativities we have, those can only be controlled through spiritual progress. What does spiritual progress mean? Purifying the mind, purifying our antahkaran. It's only through the process of purifying that the negativities get reduced. And how is the mind purified? Through spiritual progress. Through attaching the mind to God, our heart gets purified. There's no material process, there's no physical process in the world that could purify us on the inside. There's no soap that reaches in here. The only thing that can purify us is attaching our mind to God. So that's a spiritual path. That's spiritual progress. Spiritual progress means how much have we attached our mind to God? What percentage of our attachment is in God? That much spiritual progress we have attained, and that much purity of heart we have attained. The more someone's heart purifies, all those negativities, the anger, the jealousy, all of the things that hurt us on a daily basis, all of those start getting reduced, and all the good qualities, forbearance, honesty, generosity, all those qualities get developed by purifying our mind. Now, what if the one who's following a spiritual path, the one who's attaching his mind to God through bhakti, what if that person says, well, I don't need the world? Now we're looking at it from the other side. We showed that even a totally worldly person does need God in order to control his inner world, purify his heart, develop the good qualities of his mind, and attain perfect happiness, because only God is perfect happiness. Now, from the other side, what if a person says, well, I don't need the world. I'll have nothing to do with the world. No one who's living in this world can say that. Even a Jnani Paramahans, absorbed in his samadhi, has a physical body and needs to feed that body. Anyone who has a physical body has to eat, sleep, sometimes take medicine, sometimes seek shelter. These are all things that we require from the world. So everybody, human beings, animals, ordinary people, saints, everybody needs something from this world. As long as we're living on this earth, we need to eat a certain number of calories, we have to have a certain amount of protein, vitamins, minerals, we have to sleep a certain amount. All of this is required for the maintenance of our physical body. So both are required, in fact. God is required to give us happiness on the inside, and the world is required in order to maintain a healthy body. So that's important to keep in mind, that both have a place, both have a role. You can't negate either side. But both have their place. Remember, if someone believes that I'm just going to indulge in the world, then in fact neither side gets taken care of. Let's say someone just says, I'll just find my happiness in this world, I'll indulge to the maximum. Then neither is he going to find happiness because he's ignoring God. No one can find happiness without God. Nor is he going to maintain the health of his physical body. Because to do that, we have to maintain a balance. Natyashnatastu yogosti nachaikantam anashnatah nachati svapnashilasya jagrato naivacharjuna. In the Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that you should neither eat too much nor too little. You should neither sleep too much nor sleep too little. Yuktahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta swapnava bodhasya yogo bhavati dukkha. Everything needs to find a balance. Even our behavior should be moderated. Our eating should be moderated. Our sleeping should be moderated. Then we maintain a healthy body. We have a healthy lifestyle. So the world is to be used in order to maintain the health of our physical body. That's what the world is for. So it has to be used in the proper way. If we ignore it totally, Krishna tells Arjuna, Shariyatra pichate na prasiddhyeda karmana. If you just do nothing, then you can't even support the existence of your own physical body. So you have to do something, and whatever you do should be in balance. Naradji says in his Narad Bhakti Darshan, Lokopi tava deva bhojanadi vyaparastva sharira dharana vadhi. Do what you have to maintain the health of your physical body, but don't overdo it. If we overindulge, then we also fall sick. If we deny our body completely, then we also fall sick. So we have to strike a balance. We can't ignore our worldly needs, but we can't overindulge either. Kripalu Ji Maharaj kehte hain ki ye sansar hamare upayog ke liye hai, hamare upabhog ke liye nahin. Whoever uses this sansar for his upabhog, he will get ill. He will have problems with his physical body. But if we approach it in a balanced way, we understand this world is for calories, vitamins, minerals, protein. I take just as much as I need, and I make use for my physical body. I need some shelter over my head so that I don't freeze in the winter. I need some medicine whenever I do fall sick, so I can't ignore the world altogether. But I have to remember that no matter how much I indulge in the world, internally that won't give me happiness. God will give me happiness. And to attain God, I need to maintain the health of my physical body. Let's say someone thinks, I'll just sit and repeat Radhe Radhe, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Shyam. For my whole life, I'll just forget about food, water, sleep. How long will we go on doing that? We need to do devotion for a certain period of time in order to fully purify our heart and attain God. Do we really think we can just keep sitting and sitting and chanting and never eat or sleep? No, we need something for our physical body. When we get so hungry and weak that we can't even sit up, then what kind of devotion will we be doing? We'll be distracted by the pain and discomfort in our body, and we won't be able to remember God either. So we need to maintain the health of our physical body. We have to give it what it needs so that we can do devotion and attain God. Desire is not a bad thing. What is the ultimate source of our desire? The ultimate source of desire is that we belong to God and He is happiness, therefore we desire happiness. There's a term, we are ansh and He is anshi. Like a drop of water is ansh and the ocean is anshi. So let's say water evaporates, goes up into the cloud, forms clouds, and that water rains down in the mountains somewhere. That water finds its way to the ocean. It's drawn inexorably to the ocean because it is ansh and the ocean is its anshi. So there's a natural attraction between ansh and anshi. So when God is anand, God is perfect happiness, and we are His ansh, so quite naturally we desire for Him, and desiring for Him is the exact same thing as desiring for happiness. So you don't have to wonder, why does everybody in the whole world desire happiness? Because every soul is ansh of God. So every soul, without anyone having to teach him or train him, automatically desires happiness. What's the first thing we do when we're born? We cry. Why? Because we're protesting against the pain of birth. That's not why I'm here. I didn't come here to suffer. I came here looking for happiness. Where's my happiness? So we cry to get rid of the pain and to proclaim to the world that I want happiness. We know it from the moment we're born. Our soul knows it. We feel it from deep within that we must find perfect happiness. And that's the source of all of our desires. In fact, all of our desires aren't even desires. They're just an effort to fulfill our one true desire for perfect happiness. The desire for money, the desire for love, the desire for fame. What is all of that? We think that by getting famous, we'll find happiness. We think that by becoming wealthy, we'll become happy. It's the happiness we're seeking. Yet, no matter what we get in this world, that void still remains on the inside, because what was the original desire? The original desire was for God, and we're giving ourselves everything else. Everything but God. Our soul is demanding God. Our soul is demanding divine happiness, and we're giving it everything but. Here, try this food. Did that make you happy? No. Here, have this much money. Did that make you happy? No. Keep trying all the things in the world, and we keep failing to find happiness. The one thing we need is God. And in fact, God has given us this human birth. This physical body was given to us so that we could endeavor to find Him in this life. Ihache davedi datha satyamasti nache diha vedin mahati vinashti. Our Vedas say that if you find God in this life, that's good. Before your physical body expires, if you find God, good. That's what you were meant to do. If you don't, it's a big disaster. Ihache dashakat bodhum prak sharirasya visrasaha tatah sargeshu lokeshu sharira tvaya kalpate. Ved goes on to say, if we haven't found God by the time this physical body expires, we don't know what species we'll be born into. We could go anywhere in the 8.4 million species of existence, and it could be millions or billions of births before we get another human birth. And this human birth is the only chance to attain God. And attaining God means attaining happiness. One who doesn't believe in God may say, I don't want God, but I do want happiness. That's like saying, I want food, but I don't want to chew. I want to satisfy my hunger, but I don't want to eat anything. That's like saying, I want happiness, but I don't want God. The two are one and the same. God is happiness. And we've been given this human birth in order to attain that happiness. But we have to look in the right place. We're looking in the place where there's all physical things, material things that can support our physical body, but were never meant to give us spiritual happiness. God is meant to give us spiritual happiness. So the intelligent, wise person lives in the world just using whatever he needs to maintain the health of his body, and he endeavors to attach his mind to God and experience real divine happiness in this lifetime. But that one who's endeavoring to experience God in this lifetime, he must also remember that I can't ignore the world. I also have to properly and carefully take care of all of my worldly needs. We have a job, we have certain family duties to take care of. If someone thinks, I'm going to try to attain God in this life, but I'm going to be careless in all of my worldly matters, he won't succeed in attaining God either. Because as soon as we become careless in our worldly matters, those things start intruding on our spiritual efforts. Because as soon as our life in the world becomes a mess, then how will we remember God? So we have to keep We have to maintain harmony in our worldly matters also, maintain harmony in the family, do our duties properly, do our job properly, maintain everything. Don't disturb anybody or anything by saying, I don't need the world, I don't need you, I have God. Just keep quiet. You have God on the inside. You know that your mind is attached to God. Stay attached to God. Get more attached to God. Don't get more attached in the world. Lekin kisi ko nahi batana hai. You don't have to tell a single person in this world that, let's say, someone is getting very much attached to God, and he feels that, I love God more than anyone in this world. That's a good thing. That's the goal of the spiritual path. But does anyone in your life want to hear that? No. No one in your life wants to know that you love God more than them. If it's true, good. That's what you should be doing. But what is the use of telling anybody about it? Just keep quiet. maintain harmony in all of your family matters, do your job properly at work, quietly go about your business, and internally give everything to God. Give your heart and soul, all your emotions. Tameva sharanam gaccha sarva bhavena bharata. Gita, Krishna says, Arjun, surrender to God with all of your heart, all of your emotions. And in the world, keep doing what you have to. So even the one following the path of God realization can have a normal life in the world. In fact, his life in the world should be more healthy, more balanced, more harmonious. Because he's improving the quality of his mind, he's purifying his heart, he's developing all the good qualities and reducing the bad qualities, so it means his behavior should improve, his ability to deal with difficult situations in the world should improve. So not only will he be receiving true happiness internally by attaching his mind to God, but he will also become more effective and more balanced in all of his behavior in the world. So both sides are improved through spiritual progress. And the one who's following a spiritual path should also keep in mind that because we only have one mind, if I think I'll be careless in all of my worldly matters, but I'll be careful in devotion, that won't last for long. We can't compartmentalize like that. If I'm careless in my work, I'm also going to become careless in my devotion, in my bhakti. So if I want to be careful in my bhakti, I also have to be careful in all of my worldly matters and do everything properly at the right time, in the right way. There's no reason to do a bad job with anything. So in this way, both go together perfectly. They're meant to go together. Neither side is meant to negate the other side. Both complement each other perfectly. The world is for our body and God is for our soul. If we use the world properly, if we make use of the things in the world properly, we can maintain the health of our body. And if we follow the correct spiritual path, we can find real divine happiness. And that is why our Sanatan Dharma is actually made up of two dharmas. One is called Aparadharma and one is called Paradharma. Apar means preliminary and Par means supreme. One dharma is a physical dharma and the other dharma is a spiritual dharma. Both have rules. The rules of the physical dharma, ye sab sansar ko chalane ke liye hai. All the rules of how to be a good person. What are your duties in the family? What are your duties in the society? Everyone is supposed to follow all these rules of dharma. What kind of dharma is that? Physical dharma. Sansar ko chalane ke liye. The other dharma, the supreme dharma, that's for finding supreme happiness. That dharma teaches you how to attach your mind to God, how to do bhakti to attain divine happiness in this lifetime. So both are required. We can't ignore either dharma. If someone only follows the physical dharma, ignoring his desire for God, then he'll remain displeased. He'll remain incomplete. And if someone only follows spiritual dharma and ignores the needs of his physical body, then he won't be successful on his spiritual path either. So we have to take care of both, but understanding the ultimate goal is God realization. That's the ultimate goal. The physical is a means to the end. Sadhana dhamma moksha kar dwara payana jehi paraloka samvara. Tulsidas ji says in the Ramayana that this is sadhana dhamma. Having received this human body, we can do sadhana. We can do that practice, that bhakti which will take us to God. So we have to take it in that way. This physical world is a means to an end. Enjoying the world is not an end in and of itself. Attaining God is the ultimate end, and we can make use of the world in order to do that. Sharira Madhyam Khalu Dharma Sadhanam. Another verse from our Shastras saying that this physical body is for devotion to God, but you won't be able to use it for devotion to God unless you maintain its health. So in this way we've reconciled, according to how Kripaluji Maharaj has explained it, we've reconciled both the need for God and the need for the physical world in our life. So with these words I conclude my speech today. We'll finish, we'll use the last few minutes we have before the aarti to do some kirtan, we'll do some bhakti. This physical body is for doing bhakti. So how do we use it for that? In fact, we don't just need our physical body to do bhakti, we need our mind. Mind and body are very closely together. Mind, body, and soul. Soul is akarta. We use our mind and body to perform our karmas. But mind is actually the most important one. Mind and soul are within the body. Soul is giving life to the mind. Mind is giving life to the body. But whatever, who's the decider? The mind is the decider. The mind decides I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. And true bhakti is in fact done from the mind. Whatever we are thinking of, usi ki bhakti ho rahi hai. If we're sitting and doing kirtan with our physical body, but our mind is in the world, then we're not doing real bhakti to Bhagwan. So how do we use our physical body? We can chant God's name. We're sitting in the temple using our physical body. We can use our vani to chant God's name. We can use our eyes to have darshan of the murti of Bhagwan. But more important than any of this, we have to use our mind to remember God. That is the real bhakti. In fact, only those moments where we are thinking of Him count as real bhakti. The rest, well, it may be counted as a good action since we physically came to the temple and we're physically here. That's a good thing, but it doesn't count as bhakti. It will only purify our heart to the extent our heart is attached to God. So while we do the kirtan, try to close your eyes and think of God being close to you. Think of any personal form of God, like Krishna, Radha. Think of a personal form and feel related to Him. Remember that you are eternally related to Him. And only when you fully surrender to Him will you receive perfect happiness forever. So let's do a little bit of kirtan and do this meditation.